Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here this evening with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. Take a breath, Mac. How's it going?
It's been frantic.
Yeah.
It's people need to get their shots or be smart and wear masks and protect themselves.
Or get a vaccine. There are plenty of places to do so. Providence, he said, hospital, pharmacies, a walk-in clinic, open daily 7 to 7.
There's other places, too.
There are quite a few other places.
I know you have to say that.
Clatsop County Health Department has a whole list of all of your wonderful opportunities.
And you know, before we get to some fun stuff, a week ago, Edith Hengsgard Miller passed away.
She did. Lovely woman.
Yeah, she was such a wonderful woman. And, of course, I mean, I got here after she was the iconic mayor for a while. But we got her involved in the Astoria Bicentennial Celebration. That's how I got to know her. And I just love, I think she was 80-something.
Yeah.
And we asked her if she would be the chairperson. And she had just walked 4 miles to come to the office to chat with us in the rain.
I
asked her, she goes, oh, no, I'm too old for that. And I was like, you're in better shape than I am. And you just walked 4 miles and you're going to walk 4 miles home. And then I said, well, how about being the honorary chair? And she said, I think I would enjoy that. Yeah. And her leadership through the Astoria Bicentennial Celebration was just huge. And Paulette and I used to meet weekly with her. And she was just such a charming, wonderful woman.
She was very hip, too.
She kind of was.
Wasn't she?
Yeah. Yes.
That's how I remember her.
And it's funny because I've run into so many people. Like there's a guy on our board, Vern Fowler, and he's like, oh, yeah, she was my babysitter. And then somebody else, I just ran into a hometown girl, a lady named Ann Surrett. And she said, oh, yeah, she was my Girl Scout leader. And just, you know, I mean, I think there's those kind of connections all over the place. And just what a wonderful legacy that the minute you say her name, people smile.
Yes.
Yep. So very sad that she passed away. But you just had a great trip, a vacation.
I did. Got back from Central Oregon. So went a little hideaway and got outdoors, lots of biking and hiking and loved it. Loved that sunshine weather. It's a little smoky, I will say. It kind of deters me every time I think, ooh, this is where I want to retire.
Was it smoky because it's smoky or smoky because of all the fires?
Smoky because of all the fires,
okay.
But they're happening like every year now.
Well, that's true. So, we're not going to get into the whole smoky bear, smoky the bear thing.
No.
Okay.
But it's beautiful. But when I was up there, we went to Todd Lake, beautiful little lake. It used to be called Lost Lake.
Ooh.
And they changed the name because apparently in Oregon, there were too many Lost Lakes.
I was going to say, I can think of a couple in Washington.
I knew of one in Oregon up on Mount Hood. Beautiful, but I didn't know of any others. So they changed the name to Todd Lake. And Todd Lake was named for Central Oregon pioneer John Todd. In 1860, he built the first bridge in Bend.
Ooh,
first one, across the Deschutes River.
I like that.
And Todd Lake is nestled in the ancient volcano that last scoured by glaciers 18,000 years ago. The receding glaciers left behind a rock basin holding Todd Lake, which covers 33 acres to a depth of 60 feet. And it's just glorious.
Wow.
It's beautiful. Great little hike around the lake up there. Usually you can see several mountaintops, but again, it was a little smoky.
Smoky.
So we could see a smoky Mount Bachelor because it's up at Mount Bachelor. Mm. So you're up, again, 6,000 feet. And then you go hike around this.
So even
this
in the summertime, 6,000 feet, and you said the lake is 60 feet deep at some points. So is it icy cold? Do you go swimming in it at all? Do you wade in it, or do you just like fish or just walk around it?
We don't. Mark loves to fish. It's a stocked lake because it was fishless lake. It's just glorious. It's absolutely stunning because it's clear all the way to the bottom. So anywhere around the lake, you can see all the way to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And the kids like to do just splash around, but no swimming in that lake.
Okay, but they splash around.
It is cold, yes.
Okay.
When we go in June, it's usually snow covered still. So August is the month.
And I have to throw out kudos that you are a expert Facebooker.
Social media entrepreneur.
I like that. And your family is so darn photogenic.
Thank you.
That I just always am reminded, oh, my kids used to be cute and little.
Yes.
No, they're not.
I will say it's the amount of photographs you take, and I take a lot of photographs.
Oh, see, I want you to say, oh, these are just first takes.
Oh, no. So you got to take like 20 pictures, and you get one good one, especially with little ones, right? And Mark, because Mark closes his eyes in every picture.
But see, every time I've seen photos of that place, because you've been there before.
We have.
I'm like, I should schedule a vacation there.
It is. It's beautiful.
But I should do you the honor of not scheduling while you're there.
There you go.
Be like, geez, Mac, don't I see you enough already?
It's pretty. It's nice. Todd Lake, and it's just 30 minutes from Sun River, about 45 minutes from Bend. So a nice little family afternoon up there. Easy hike for sure.
Easy. We like easy.
Yes.
So we got to give the same old plug. Oh, my goodness. The grounds of the Flavel House just look amazing.
They really do.
We had a dump truck full of mulch that was delivered. Oh. And just this week, it was officially all spread around.
Oh, nice.
And we probably need some more. But it is amazing. And some days, it's just they get the Flavel House Garden Society, mm-hmm. newly Christian, less than a month now, almost a month now. They come Monday nights, 5 to 7, and then Wednesday mornings, 10 to noon. And sometimes there's just like three or four people. And then there was like one day, like a week ago, there were like 15 people on the grounds.
Oh,
it was like this just
so nice.
This amazing energy. So it's very, very wonderful. And if you want to lend a hand, there's still some stuff to do. And it's going to be an ongoing thing forever. So
snacks provided.
We always have some snacks and big thank you. And
outdoors, so nice and safe. And
yeah.
Good.
And people are noticing. I mean, people that walked through the grounds 6 months ago, and then I walked through with them again, and they're like, wow, what's going on here? And I said, a whole bunch of volunteers.
Oh, that's
what
so
an amazing
good.
Community we live in. All right. Do you have anything to plug?
I don't. No.
Okay. But we should be like doing anti-plugs. Like, don't have mass gatherings.
Oh, yes. Hunker down, folks. School's about to start.
All right. I'm very nervous. Let's see. Big things that happen tomorrow.
Okay.
And the big history highlights. So you can be smart, or these are icebreakers if you don't know what to talk about on your next Zoom conference.
There we go.
So August 30th, the month is almost over. Oh my goodness. 1682, William Penn leaves England to sail to the New World.
Nice.
And
the New World.
And he starts, I know, I put it in quotation marks. Yeah. I don't know if you could hear that when I said it. Because, you know, nobody knew it was here until we discovered
until
it.
Until everybody who was
Columbus.
Here.
Yes. Told everybody that it was already here, that it was here. But he starts Pennsylvania, of course.
Okay. Yeah.
If you were going to name a state, what would you name it?
Ooh.
Alanistan or something like that?
Yeah.
Would you?
I don't know.
McElvania. That's what I'd call it.
Queen Alana. There we go.
Okay. 1890. President Benjamin Harrison signed the first U.S. law requiring inspection of meat products.
Oh. What year again?
1890.
Oh, okay.
So before that, you know, who cared if you had thumbs or something in your sausage? So I'm glad. I like the Food and Drug Administration and the meat
yes.
inspectors that are out there.
For sure.
I like being confident
that the food you eat is good.
That the hamburger has no human pieces in it. Let's see. 1957. U.S. Senator Strom Thurmond speaks for 24 hours and 27 minutes against civil rights.
Ugh.
Strom, come on.
He was consistent.
Oh, my goodness, was he ever.
Yes.
1963, the hotline established between Washington and Moscow. But it's really, I want it to be a red phone that you pick up, like on Batman's desk or something, but it's not. It's just a teleprompter, teletype thing.
In my mind, it is red, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
1993, the 150 millionth.
Oh.
Visitor to the Eiffel Tower.
I saw that one. That was
the Oregon Film Museum's catching up.
Oh, yep. And it was a local person that visited. I thought that was kind of neat.
Would you just love to be that first that visitor?
Although it's probably somebody that's been so many times, they're just like,
Oh, please, keep the balloons. I don't want the t-shirt.
Yeah.
But our history highlighted thing I think had the most impact and kind of the cool thing. 1967. Thurgood Marshall is confirmed as the first African-American Supreme Court justice.
That is a good one.
I like him. And I like the movie that one of the movies that they made about him a couple of years ago.
Which movie is that?
I think it's called Thurgood.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember now what it was called.
Okay.
But it was about his early lawyer career. It
wasn't made in Oregon. So,
no.
Yeah, no pressure.
See, that's why I don't have all the details.
Yeah, that's good.
So did I miss anything?
Just one, 1976. Tom Brokaw becomes the first news anchor of the Today Show.
See, I have trouble moving past my young adulthood where evening network news was still important before CNN and Fox and all of the other stuff. when it was the big three.
Yeah.
You had Tom Brokaw on NBC, Peter Jennings on ABC,
loved
and Dan
him.
Rather on CBS. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, it's hard for me, and I think people today wouldn't like really think about it that way.
Right.
So it's kind of sad.
It is. It's very different. Although I do have to say, I like the two female anchors that the Today Show has now. I thought that was a very nice switch.
Two out of two or two out of three?
Well, the two main anchors of the Today Show are women.
Okay.
And so that had not happened before, at least on the Today Show, which has always been the number one rated morning talk show. And it is it's an entertainment show, folks.
Yes.
It's not news. It's entertainment.
See, I only care because I've only been on Good Morning America. I've not been on the Today Show.
Oh.
So.
I don't know. I guess back in the day, I've probably been on all of them. One point.
As the local reporter on the scene.
In a hurricane
somewhere,
yes. Sounds familiar.
That's funny. Okay, so shall we get right to it then?
Yes.
Because speaking of the Supreme Court,
yep.
I thought it'd be kind of fun. I stumbled across this somewhere, probably on the internet, so it must be true.
Right.
But these are kind of fun things that you may not know about the Supreme Court, and I did not know about them.
Okay.
So
let's do.
Let's see. The court decided what pickles are. I think this might be the most land-breaking case that the Supreme Court ever had. Sure. Defining what a pickle is has always been hard. Fruit? Vegetable? Try fruit of the vine. Why? The seeds. Who said? The Supreme Court of the United States, the landmark case Nix versus Heiden, also classified tomatoes in the same way all the way back in 1893.
So it is a fruit.
It apparently is.
There you go. Okay. Until the building was finished, court was sometimes held at bars. It's not the most PC idea to meet about justice surrounded by booze, but the makeshift American government in the old days had to take what they could get. In 1809, the Supreme Court of the United States held their first meeting at Long's Tavern in Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, from 1815 to 1816, they met at Bell's Tavern. It wasn't until 1860 when the Supreme Court room, the old Senate chamber at the U.S. Capitol, was finally ready for use.
I kind of think maybe they should go back to the bars.
Maybe. I would imagine that some decisions are still discussed
made there,
this
yes.
way, right?
Jefferson put an end to their stylish wigs, which I really do think is the difference between the British and the United States, or the wigs.
Yeah.
There's a reason you don't see John Roberts rocking a wig, and it's not just because of how absurdly out of fashion they are. In fact, it was Thomas Jefferson who led the one-man army against Supreme Court justices sporting wigs. The decision was made after one poor justice came decked out in a white powdered wig like the British. Jefferson was repulsed. Good
funny.
For TJ. One more feather in his cap.
So, yeah. There's a statue of Muhammad the Prophet in the chamber. Members of the press will find a statue of Prophet Muhammad above their seating area at the Supreme Court. Despite the fact that Islam discourages depicting Muhammad, the north wall frieze inside the chamber features several law-giving figures in religion. One of them is Muhammad. The expected controversy was pretty much calmed down long ago, in part through a fatwa.
They okayed DMT for religious use. There's a hallucinogenic tea that is used in a four-hour religious ritual for congregation members in New Mexico. Of course, it's New Mexico. The tea contains DMT, a completely illegal drug with extreme mind-altering capabilities. In 2006, however, Chief Justice John Roberts said the fact that the church's tea was taken away was wrong, and the court determined that it was totally all right for their practices.
I like totally cool for their practices.
Totally cool. Like far out.
With the topic there. Justices used to be on dollar bills. In the summer of 1969, America stopped distributing $10,000, $5,000, $1,000, and $500 bills. If you still had a $10,000 bill, however, you would have seen a portrait of Lincoln's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Salmon P. Chase. If you had a $500 bill, you would see a photo of John Marshall, one of the court's most notable chief justices.
Okay, so there's a lot of things there to dissect.
Yeah.
I'm kind of torn on, I like the idea of a $1,000 bill and a $500 bill.
Sure.
I mean, I know most restaurants are like, we can't take hundreds or fifties, but I still kind of like the idea.
Nobody wants your cash now.
That's right. And I kind of love the Salmon P. Chase.
Yeah.
That name.
It's a good name.
It feels like a guy should be a cannery operator in 1890 yeah. here in Astoria or along the Columbia River
Someone
somewhere.
Someone was thinking.
Salmon P. Chase. The first meeting was in Manhattan, which of course was the first place where the Capitol, the government, our government met. The Supreme Court of the United States was not always holding hearings in its esteemed chambers in Washington, D.C. In fact, the first meeting ever was held in New York City on February 1st, 1790. Three of President Washington's appointed justices showed up to the top floor of the Royal Exchange on Broad Street in Manhattan.
Nice. There's a basketball court on the top floor. The U.S. Supreme Court building has a lot of cool and historical rooms. However, none compare to the highest court in the land. That's the name of the basketball court on their top floor of the building. If you ever want to see the justices out of their robes, rocking shorts and sneakers, your best bet is to break into the basketball court, which has been there since the 1940s.
Okay, a lot to digest there as well. Yeah. I like the highest court.
Good name.
And then I love the idea of them like playing basketball. All of the justices playing basketball in their robes.
Yes.
Especially like Ginsburg when she was still alive. I would have liked to have seen that.
I could see her doing that.
That would make me happy. The Ten Commandments are on the wall. In addition to a statue of Muhammad the Prophet, the Supreme Court also houses the Ten Commandments, not the originals, of course. Though there is a legal separation between church and state, the ultimate symbol of the state is adorned with the ultimate symbol of the church. Charlton Heston and perhaps Moses himself would be proud of the display on the south wall of the first six commandments, while secular humanists are probably not so excited by that.
It's a good reminder, though, of the separation, right? They do have their own police force. The Supreme Court of the United States Police is a long name for a security force, and that's why most people refer to the officers as members of the Supreme Court Police. Their duties include protecting the building and grounds, as well as associate justices and chief justices. These folks are not regular police officers. They're trained at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Georgia.
Nice. And this one's like the basketball one. They have a frozen yogurt machine.
Nice.
Elena Kagan made history when she was appointed as a justice, but one of her greatest feats, according to staff and employees of the chamber, was her mission to have a fro-yo machine installed inside the building. She did this during her first year on the court by getting in with the cafeteria committee and fighting for the installation of a frozen yogurt machine.
I mean, they should be able to make good arguments, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, could you imagine some silly committee that's deciding what's on the menu or in the cafeteria and the case is being made to
Sounds
the committee.
Terrible.
but I'm kind of amused. On your first year.
Yeah. That's good.
Don't you wait till the second year to demand a yogurt machine?
Might have been a hot year. George Carlin's comedy led to a hearing. The Supreme Court takes comedy seriously. George Carlin learned that in 1978, when the highest court in the land held a case on Carlin's famous Seven Dirty Words comedy routine. The jokes opened up about a national and legal dialogue on obscenity and First Amendment rights. Decisions were made on July 3rd, 1978, with respect to indecency standards for TV, while Carlin himself said the FCC versus Pacifica case became a source of perverse pride in being a footnote to the judicial history of America.
So a little side note, when my father was about 84, 85, I'm visiting him one day, and out of nowhere he says, "Have you ever heard of this George Carlin?" And I say, "Well, of course I have. He's, you know, a stand-up comedian." And my father says, "I bought one of his books because the title was funny. The guy's filthy. It's just filled with filth." And I said, "Yes, Dad, that's what he's known for, the seven words you can't say." And he had never heard of this before.
Oh, funny.
I don't know how far he read into the book before he gave up on it.
I'm guessing your dad didn't frequent those seven words.
Yes, he did all the time, which is the funny thing. But somehow, I guess somebody else writing it and then him reading it was not appropriate. So the youngest justice ever was age 32. And of course, I think about your early 30s, a time for self-discovery, settling down, and suddenly becoming an associate justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. Joseph Story was age 32 in 1811 when he was put on the bench.
Nice. They do have an absurdly long call to order, like every good group, right? While some calls to order are mildly fancy and flowery, most cut to the chase pretty quick. The Supreme Court, however, has such a long call to order that it's almost comical. The Supreme Court marshal, in calling the courts to order, shouts, "Oyez, oyez, oyez," deriving from the term "hear ye," and proceeds with, "All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court." Wouldn't be surprising if some justices had fallen asleep by the time that was over.
I don't know how I feel about that. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
One 1964 verdict, reference Superman. I'm excited by this one. It's rare that fictional characters or superheroes are integrated into the most formal legal lexicon on the face of the earth. That's why it made a big splash in 1964 when Superman was sardonically thrown into a verdict on Burtman versus J.A. Kirsch Company. The extremely tough and sarcastic reaction to the case featured the lines, "I do not doubt that had Berkman's counsel been Superman, his X-ray eyes would have told him that a notice of appeal was being filed blocks away in the courthouse." To top off the pawnage, the verdict read, "But Berkman's counsel, so far as the record shows, is not Superman."
That's great.
I feel like perhaps that lawyer was being chided.
Yeah, possibly. They deliver opinions on about 75 out of 10,000 cases.
Wow.
75. Odds are not good on that. If your boss gave you a stack of 10,000 assignments and you did 85 of them, you probably wouldn't get hired. But the Supreme Court, however, thrives off this proportion. They only deliver less than 100 cases per year, usually between 75 and 85. Their inboxes, on the other hand, are absurdly full with petitions that go completely ignored. Not really. I mean, someone's taking a look at those. Yeah.
Although I'm kind of stunned that 10,000 is what's like thrown at them. And then I always know that they choose which ones they want to hear, but I never would have guessed there's that many.
Well, that's why they have associate justices and clerks and entire staffs that help help with this, right?
So my favorite there is still the basketball court.
Yeah, the highest court.
Yeah, I never heard anything about that before.
That's a good one.
So, all right, shall we take a little break?
Sure, we'll be back.
August 27th, 1914. Labor Day is soon here. Let your wife and servant girl rest too. Let us help you to put up a laborless menu for your table that day. We have imported fish balls, meatballs, lobsters, crabs, herring sardines, anchovies, and all kinds of meats and sauces in cans. Don't forget to can your peaches. Now is the time. E. Hauke & Co. Grocers, 1489 Franklin, phone 81.
And welcome back to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital here this evening with Mac Burns, Clatsop County Historical Society.
So since we've got time, shall we do some This Week in Local History?
Ooh, let's do it.
Straight from the
archives.
The archives of the local newspapers.
Okay.
So I feel like we still need the tick, 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 like off the wire noise. But August 29th, 1932, Frank Buck, author, adventurer, and wild animal maestro, whose camera record of his own book, Bring 'Em Back Alive, is the latest screen sensation, claims that the man-eating tiger who is the villain of his jungle drama will make all the hardworking bad men of the movies green with envy when they see him fight his way through the RKO radio pro picture. Bring 'Em Back Alive is now playing at the Liberty Theater.
Nice. August 30th, 1896. The campaign in Clatsop County will be opened tonight at Olney by the Honorable C.W. Fulton, who has been invited by the Democrats of that section to deliver an address upon the issues of the hour. It is needless to say that Mr. Fulton will do the Republican cause justice. Mm-hmm.
So this is one of my favorites, and I wish like I knew more about this. August 30th, 1933, Ralph the Robot visits Astoria to appear Friday. It's 1933, Ralph the Robot. It walks and talks just like a man. Can anyone make it out? So ran the refrain in an old-time song, and it is applicable to the Mechanical Man, which will strut the streets of Astoria on Friday of this week. This robot is being brought here by the Golden West Coffee Girl and will do pantomime performances and strange feats during a tour of the business district. The tour will start at the Astoria Budget Office at 11:15 a.m., where the Mechanical Man will be placed on the sidewalk from the front of an auto. Under its own power, will walk into the newspaper office and write a want ad. Besides performing other mysterious feats, it walks with spasmodic jerks, as if controlled by big clocks, weights, and springs. Its eyes never close, staring ahead like two pieces of glass. Its head and face are wax-like in appearance. What is it, human or mechanical? That will be up to the public to decide. It has aroused no end of speculation in the various cities where it has performed.
That is interesting.
You know, it's a guy in some kind of cardboard suit. And yet they make such a big deal about it.
Huge deal. How funny.
I want to see this because it just feels like some costume that my mom would have made for me when I was a
kid. Artificial intelligence way ahead of its time. It's 1933. But August 30th, 1944... The prize, if any, for unlucky fishermen on the river goes to Walter Earl of Tillamook, who today reported to police that his entire angling outfit, including four rods, reels, and miscellaneous fishing tackle, had been stolen from his car Tuesday night in front of a downtown hotel. And this before he even had time to wet a line in the Columbia. In commenting on the theft, Police Chief John Acton sounded a word of caution to car owners, generally about leaving valuables in their unlocked machines. Said of the chief, "There are otherwise reasonably honest people who just cannot stand the sight of fine fishing tackle, guns, and sports equipment difficult to buy at this time, within easy reach of their outstretched hand. The undermanned Astoria Police Department will do its best to protect property, but without the cooperation of citizens, generally we are working at a distinct disadvantage. Reports of thefts involving the breaking of locks and windows of parked cars have also been received at police headquarters recently." Chief Acton added, car owners should remove valuables from their machines when they leave them.
That's some good advice.
Today too, folks.
So I like this one too. This is because we've had Jimmy the librarian from the Astoria City Library, and in we have the Heritage Museum, which was the old City Hall. So August 31st, 1905, the women managers of the Astoria Public Library are today moving from the old quarters in the Brown Building on 11th Street to its new location in the City Hall. It is fully expected that the work of removal will be finished by this evening or no later than noon tomorrow, when the public is invited to view it, and the regular patrons will find more comfortable quarters than before. In the opening of the new library rooms, there will be no formalities, but the women who have labored so hard for the success of the library for many years, at times under very adverse conditions, will be present to welcome those who may come.
That is good.
So if you've been in the Heritage Museum, the Ed Parker Gallery upstairs, the big giant room where we do temporary exhibits, that was the library.
Oh, how fun.
What a great view.
August 31st, 1905, a woman known as Montana Kate was arrested last evening by the police for peddling without a license. In police circles, she's known as a daring pickpocket, and while she has not been known to have stolen anything here, it is considered to be wise to make her leave the city, as her peddling is only a cloak to hide her real location. But she had no license, but they called her Montana Kate.
Yes.
So, I mean,
I wonder if she's from Montana.
Just saying.
Okay, I love the way they write back then.
Yes.
I mean, that's just funny to me. And also, some of the things that they considered news. September 1st, 1945, Larry Beyer was feted with a wiener roast at the home of his parents, Mr. and Mrs. Ole Beyer. Saturday, on the occasion of his 8th birthday, guests were Dennis Holmes, Jean Holmes, Gary Beyer, Mrs. Flora Stratton, Mrs. Louise Holmes, the honored guest, and the hostess. So that's Denny Holmes.
I love that.
Oh. And we had him on the show years ago, and I asked him, I said, do you remember the wiener roast? Yeah. He had no idea what I was talking about, so I had to read that to him.
He was probably 8 years old too, right? Yeah. How fun.
So, funny wiener roast.
Yes.
And that makes the news.
It's good.
And sometimes, you know, I do like old-fashioned fun and games, and it does not make the news.
Yeah.
Where 200 people come.
Exactly. Sorry, Mac. Next time.
Maybe next time.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have a wiener roast at the Fun and Games event.
Sounds. If people want to come to the Flavel House, did you want to do one more plug to come take care of the grounds?
Anytime. Monday nights from 5 to 7 or Wednesday mornings from 10 until noon.
Great.
And if you don't want to come work, just take a walk through the Flavel House grounds, because it's an amazing thing. And if you see any of the people that have been volunteering, say thank you, because it is incredible.
It's great.
All right. Shall we call it a show?
That's it. That's a good one. Best one yet. But wait till next week, folks.
Wait till next week. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.